KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. Please stay tuned for Visionary Activists.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, hello, KPFA, are you hearing me? Yes, you are. Yes, yes, hello, let me welcome everybody again. Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. It is showtime. Jupiter, which represents the intelligence of theater and storytelling, is in Leo, first time, 12 years. Right now, as we convene, Jupiter in Leo, make visible, is in the 8th house, the invisible. So we go, it is showtime, it is the theater of making the invisible visible. It is such a powerful time. We aspire to weave everything together. As I mentioned last week, when we were doing a show on the power of place and Dignity Village for homeless people, you know, in Portland and Oregon and everywhere, and again, dedication to community. We're reminded also of Mike Brown's death, and at the moment of his death, Venus overhead, meaning this would not be invisible, this would not be swept away, this would be an opportunity for powerful collective healing theater. And the image for Venus then was a furious storm rages through a residential canyon, divine energy that tears down superficial barriers between life, heightening of consciousness through emotional intensity, stirring things up, and leveling social structures that are in the way of justice. That's literally itself. We go, ah, so it is, you know, a powerful time, again, village building and community, and conversations that are happening everywhere in our psyche are, how do we reconnect theater with healing? To ancient indigenous mind, healing and theater are one thing. Ancient mind would not know what we were talking about if we spoke of them as separate. Ancient mind would go, what do you mean, theater with no healing and healing with no theater? They are inextricably intertwined. Indeed, they are. You know, and they want to get back together again. So, more than perfectly, I got a note from wonderful climbing poetry, Alixa Garcia and Naima Penniman, with whom I will be presenting Friday, October 17th at the Bioneers Festival, and then we are in the process of self-assembling a number of gigs following that week on the 20th, 21st, 22nd. We will keep you posted. But the note from Alixa was, I want to send you information about a project that I've been volunteering for two reasons. That it revolves around Jarvis J. Masters, whom you visited at San Quentin some time back, or so I heard. Yes, this is so perfect. For many years, I would visit Jarvis on death row in San Quentin, and I have not in some time, but always he is one of my favorite humans and part of the council in my heart. He is the author of beautiful books, Finding Freedom, Writings from Death Row, Profound, and also That Bird Has My Wings. Again, those are all by Jarvis J. Masters. And then Alixa continues, Truthworker Theater Company is a Brooklyn-based hip-hop theater group that was started by Samara Gave last summer. It's a youth intensive from ages 16 to 22. Their work looks at many faces of incarceration. They are doing not only the incredible work on stage, but working through deep healing amongst one another. Their motto is build a stage, not a cage. And then, as we say on the Visionary Activist Show, create theater or live melodrama. There, we need that. Okay. Many of them are constantly navigating the police over-policing in their communities and the school-to-prison pipeline. Yes, we want to dissolve that. Which their first feature-length production examined in depth. They are all Black and Latino youth who have taken this work in a serious way. They're in the midst of their yearly Indiegogo fundraiser. It would mean the world to Alixa and to all of us, really, to see this incredible group of people far surpass their goal. What they're asking for is less than a third of what they need. Please click on the link. We will give you the link. You can find the link at Coyote Network News. com, my Facebook page, Coyote Network News. Please like, and also our wonderful guest Samara, I will bring in moments, can also guide you. because they are, it has a video which talks about their process and their work. It is amazing. I just got to see their work in progress. And then from Samara, she says she started Truth Worker Theater, second annual summer intensive. We have the unique and humbling opportunity to be working directly with Jarvis J. Masters, an innocent man on death row who's been incarcerated since the age of 19 in San Quentin prison and institutionalized since he was a young boy. Jarvis is working from the inside to be in collaboration with us through our creation process. Every young company member has read each of his two books, Finding Freedom and That Bird Has My Wings, in preparation for this production. We're exchanging writings and even speaking directly on the phone when permitted. Ah, God, wonderful. Calling upon technology to mediate transformational and generative dialogue between Jarvis and the youth. We are all motivated by his remarkable capacity for liberation within confinement. This process has been humbling, beautiful, and opening. Welcome, Samara.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it is so perfect, because just to say a little bit more what I said to you backstage, you know, we go, all right, we'll think of this as part one, and I'm so glad to connect with you and, you know, to literally connect again, waving to Jarvis finding his books and dusting them off and going, oh, these are so profound. But as we are convening now, Mars is rising in the east at 19 plus Scorpio, which the men astrologers in the Middle Ages called the accursed degree of the accursed sign, because its image is a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. That's why they didn't want things revealed. And we go, ah, it's perfect. And the moon right now is coal miners emerging from coal mine into sunlight. So that's why, you know, when we were wondering to do the show today or not, I go, no, it wants to happen. It wants to happen. So it's so great that you're working on this production and many other projects. Feel free to describe them and also how people can contribute. So is the Jarvis theatrical piece, is that a center of your dedication now?
It absolutely is. So it was 13 months ago now, last July, that I had the seed of a vision of Truth Worker Theater Company, which was born out of many, many, many years of working as an educator, a performer, an activist, and a teaching artist in juvenile detention centers, public schools, community centers, shelters, everywhere and anywhere, primarily in New York, but really in many places, in many states, working as an educator. And I often found that there was, while the work was so potent, the mediation of our relationships begged for more, meaning that often, just because of the world that we live in, that's often underfunded and budget cut when it comes to the arts, myself and the young people that I would have the incredible opportunity to work with would have a short time under some sort of grant or structure of an organization to work together, create something powerful and meaningful to them through devised theater, and then the program would come to a close. And perhaps the next year, if funding allowed, there would be a new cycle of young people. And this has been a really rewarding, incredible, mutually rewarding opportunity for myself and so many young voices to collaborate artistically and create a stage, not a cage. Yet, at the same time, I found that these relationships were yearning for more longevity. The work that was being created and the stories that were being told, that we were weaving together, and really I just see myself as a facilitator, a midwife of stories, and by no irony, I also work as a doula, ushering young lives through. So myself as an artist, a dancer, a poet, a performer, an educator, and a doula, all those things for me are interconnected in facilitating the telling of stories. And I found myself last summer really, really yearning for a platform that where we didn't need to stop, you know, where we could get into the lab, get into our hearts, get into our truths, and create something that could breathe and expand, where we could continue to share the stories that came out of the theater making process in a way that the young company members really had full agency and could continue to share their work and their stories. And so that's what sparked me to create Truth Worker last summer. And it was really just with a whole lot of vision, a whole lot of heart, and no resources. And so we did. Myself and 16 young people between the ages of 15 and 21 at the time got together with donated space in Brooklyn and worked really, really hard throughout the summer, thinking initially that we were doing a summer program, and created a work called Barcode, a performative analysis of the school-to-prison pipeline. And that work, as the title indicates, was a deep, rigorous, original work written and performed by the company that looked at the school-to-prison pipeline. And we drew connections from Willie Lynch to Trayvon Martin. No coincidence and the beautiful synchronicity, although not beautiful outcome, in our perspective, and my perspective, was right as we were creating this piece, the Zimmerman verdict emerged, which definitely unearthed a whole lot of emotion and heart and fire and water. And so pulling that into our work and sourcing interviews with formerly incarcerated youth, as well as working directly and citing research from New York City's key lawyers in the Stop and Frisk trials, we created this work, Barcode, which interrogates cycles of systemic oppression through a compelling narrative that weaves rhyme, multimedia, hip-hop, theater, dance, and personal testimony. Right. So this happened last summer, and we were incredibly moved by the response that was catalyzed by the initial sharing of the work last August, and had the honor of being invited to continue with the donated space in Brooklyn, which is an amazing performance space called Jack. Continue to be invited as the resident youth theater company there. And so we just kept going. We kept deepening the work, developing the work, and finding opportunities to share the work. So we were able to go to Bioneers on the Bay in Massachusetts and share Barcode, as well as perform at Teachers College at the Trayvon Effect Conference, and also within our own residency self-produce deepening workshops of the production and keep growing and keep working. And we never would have imagined that we would have deepened so much and had such a powerful platform. And all of this was happening without real funding, and with just a lot of perseverance and a lot of vision and a lot of heart from all of the young company members and myself, and a huge amount of volunteer effort. And through this process, and particularly with a company of 16 youth being offered the amazing opportunity to be standing before hundreds of people, you know, for example, at Columbia School of Public Health, speaking and teaching from lived experience to graduate students who are going to be at the forefront of creating policy around issues like this, around public health, we began to self-reflect and notice and observe that we had only just scratched the surface, and we were not done creating work and investigative performance healing theater that looked at mass incarceration and the prison industrial complex. And so hence unfolded a beautiful circle of synchronicity that landed us in the present work, which is working with Jarvis. And the name of this piece that we just this summer started developing and had our first workshop of last Sunday is called In Prism, Boxed In and Blacked Out in America. So with personal relationship to Jarvis and his family, we decided, let's work together. Let's work together and bring attention not only to the ways that the system can cyclically create systems of power and oppression and inequity that leads to often marginalization and incrimination and criminalization of so many people nationally and globally, but we also wanted to focus on healing, really, really focus on the capacity for liberation within confinement. And so that's what this work is doing. And this summer, quite honestly, has been one of the most profound, painful, challenging, opening invitations to do this healing work and this healing theater, because in order to really tell the truth around a story that is so complex and comes from a source of such deep trauma individually and systemically, it hurts. And we all have to be willing to go into those spaces and those places. And, you know, every single Young Company member, including myself, has personal direct relationships with individuals who are currently or recently behind bars. And so this opportunity with Jarvis has allowed us to go deeper into those places. And those relationships, whether they be severed or not, you know.
And yeah, no, absolutely. And just to chime in about how your work and your cahooting with Jarvis and all that you're dedicated to is so perfect. It wants to happen just even right this second, you know. Neptune represents how a culture tells itself its own story through images, you know, and Neptune right now is in Pisces, in Jarvis's sign, and what's so, and it's probably dancing with you undoubtedly, and it is the invisible tendrils that actually lead and guide culture that the molecules of matter follow along behind. So if we were to speak to Jarvis and to your dedicated work, we would say, imagine the feeling that, you know, the most exiled, suppressed, and beautiful parts of Jarvis and parts of you are about to be completely culturally welcome. And let's connect it to funding, too. May vision and funding come together as part of the healing. And then just one other thing I wanted to put on our work table about the perfection of now. You know, Neptune's in Pisces every 165 years, you know, but it represents the way in which it's radical is it represents everything that has been forgotten, dissed, exiled, imprisoned, undervalued, but said to be where a culture's soul or its replenishing vision lives. So right away to all humans, this language says, oh, humans, don't be distracted by entertainment, by dazzling celebrity hoo-ha. Look at what's missing, what's been shut away, what's been invisible. That's where the real treasure is. So that's why it's so perfect what you're doing. And just also, you know, Neptune is transiting first time in 165 years, you know, Jarvis's son right next to Chiron, the mentor. I want to come back to you about speaking to about Jarvis as a mentor and as a theatrical being. You know, and so we'd say to Jarvis, it is the coolest time ever to be you. You know, again, so much love and support. And what you have to say is so completely welcome, the path is unfurling. Ah, all right. So if people want to, I mean, there's so many, you know, fundraisings out there and all of that, and sometimes we just get overwhelmed. However, I really do think that what you're dedicated to is so, you know, part of assuming cultural narrative lead. It's so crucial and important. And then my own love for, you know, Jarvis is one of the most wonderful humans on the planet against all that he's overcome. So how do people contribute to your fund drive now?
Well, we have an Indiegogo campaign, and it's live until September 15th. And if you go to Indiegogo.com and look Truthworker Theater Company, Truthworker's new production, it will come up. The direct link is igg.me/@Truthworker2014. Although, again, if you go to truthworker.com and look into the theater company, you can see ways to donate. It'll take you directly there. And as well, if you, you know, go to Indiegogo and put in Truthworker, it will also come up. And what I will say about our fundraiser right now is that this work, the reason that this work needs to be supported, it is not just about creating a theatrical production. That happens to be a side effect of the process. This is about cultivating a community of young visionaries and creating a safe space for young people to be the subjects, not the objects of their stories, and to narrate their own experiences and unique perspectives in ways that unpack, problematize, and shift the so often dominant and the dominant and so often stereotypical narratives in our mainstream media. And And what's powerful about this process and why it needs to be supported, we hope, is because we're creating a family and we're building bridges. And so this is not simply theater, and this is not simply, you know, an extracurricular activity for young people. This is a home and a hub and a community through which young people who are so often over-policed and so often literally stopped and frisked and taken away their sense of agency are dictating their own truths and being the tellers of their own stories. And it's the process behind the scenes. So every single company member and what this fundraiser is supporting is that they're getting professional stipends. So the funds that I'm hoping, the resources I'm hoping to raise for the company goes to supporting the creation of this work, not in a hierarchical nature, but rather in a circular way, so that the young people can say yes to their craft and they can say yes to the power of creating healing art, and so that they don't have to choose between bagging groceries and saying yes to their own power. So that's huge, is that this is an opportunity that I'm very, very committed, and whether it comes through personal, through the fundraising, or it has to come some other way, I'm really committed to being able to create opportunities for professional stipends for the young people. And then, you know, additionally, we are, I make it a point to really holistically support the process. That means that the young people are being nourished in their bodies with food, healthy food every time they're coming to 3, 4, 5 times 6 hour devising rehearsals. And we meet multiple times every single week in the summer. We're at least 20 hours a week developing work. And throughout the year, we meet Saturdays for full days and Wednesdays after school. So it's very in depth, and the support that we're hoping to garner will not only enable the process to continue, but also we're really committed to being able to share this work and to share this work in non-traditional ways. We want to be able to say yes to opportunities to come to communities that may not have the resources to bring us out, but where we can sit in a circle, share our performance work, be in dialogue, raise awareness around stories like Jarvis's and the capacity of the human spirit and the human mind, and also raise consciousness and awareness around ways that we can educate ourselves and empower ourselves to never be incarcerated. And I don't mean that literally. Of course, hopefully literally, but I also mean that figuratively, within our own hearts, within our own minds, within our own sense of who we are in the world, that we are never incarcerated. And we want to be able to share this work in really grassroots ways with communities everywhere, you know, with young people, with students, with elders, so that we can flip the paradigm of who is given the platform from which to tell their stories. And just one thing I really want to say is that build a stage, not a cage, is something that Jarvis has come up with through this process of collaboration with us. And it's his, we've grabbed onto it as Truth Worker, and it's something that Jarvis has envisioned and imagined and created as a beautiful slogan: build a stage, not a cage. Those are his words directly.
I love that. Well, all of that, and then power of story, exactly as you say. Let's do Radio Mojo, exactly as you're guiding us. You know, stories create, you know, inspire people. Wow, do you hear about Truth Worker Theater? To then do things, which then becomes a story, which then inspires people to do things. And then, so we go, yes, yes, spiraling out, yes, yes, just this sort of thing in Palestine, just this sort of thing. I mean, that's really, you know, build a stage, not a cage. And then part of the beauty again of you collaborating with Jarvis is he is a Pisces in eighth house, again, way hidden. His rising sign is Leo. Make it visible. That is a particular resonance that is pertinent to all of us, you know, our micro personal selves to the whole larger thing. And then also, you know, Jupiter is about stories, and how a culture defines wealth. which is not limited to money. It doesn't exclude money, but, you know, what is a wealthy culture? And right now, as we're cahooting, you know, again, I would like to have, you know, to stir up encouragement, and support for your project, but also, you know, for people to, we often raise money for this station, but this is a great opportunity to raise money for colleagues, our colleague, Truth Worker Theater, and our colleague, Jarvis Masters in San Quentin Prison. And this show, absolutely, Visionary Activist Show, there's a lot of people in prison who listen to this show. And again, that's the idea of, you know, supporting that we are all kinned. And then just one more thing before I toss it back to you. You know, it's like, what would a wise and wealthy culture do? It would be so curious about, you know, stories. I met some years back the mother of the American Taliban, you know, who had grown up in privilege and then joined the Taliban when it was legal to do so. And a wise culture, you know, would say, good heavens, lad, you must have amazing stories to tell, rather than shut him away for years, you know. And I'm so grateful to your dedication and part of this cultural movement. This wants to happen, going, stories, stories. Yeah. You know, there's that great saying from Black Christian Southern teachings, there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's something that I really feel committed to and compelled by in this direct work with Jarvis. It's been such a healing journey for everyone. And, you know, to speak a little bit specifically about Jarvis and about this process of devising, because I imagine some people might be like, oh, okay, a bunch of kids read his books and are making theater based on them. And it goes much more intricately and intimately than that. And the process has been one in which we've had the incredible grace to be able to be working directly with Jarvis, which means that every opportunity that he gets to make a phone call, he's calling. And when he calls, if I'm not in rehearsal with the young people, then we speak directly, and we're using technology in such a way that I'm able to capture the conversation between us. So any stories that he's sharing, memories that he's relaying, dreams that he's telling me about, then I can go into rehearsal the next day and we can hook up to the speaker system, and the young people can hear his voice directly speaking to them, and then take his stories, take his messages, study his voice, literally study the way he pauses when you can know that his heart is in his mouth, and learn that and embody that, and ultimately devise in a way that's inspired by that, weaving together a narrative pulled from Jarvis's directly. And so we've had been afforded the great synchronicity that there have been quite a few times that he's able to get access to the phone when we're in rehearsal throughout the summer, which is because we were constantly in rehearsal throughout the summer. So he would call, and we would put the phone on speaker, and he would be in a room with all of us in rehearsal with us for as long as we had, until the guards took the phone back. And the kids would ask him questions. We would share pieces that were developed in rehearsals that were in progress, share them with him. You know, he would cry, we would cry. He would reflect on them, say, wow, you know, you got it. Or he would say, wow, that's really powerful, but I don't hear the chaos in the background that's here, you know. And really, we've been really allies and collaborators through this process in a way that's incredibly profound, incredibly, incredibly profound. And, you know, and also painful, because it's a lot as well to hold as one individual trying to facilitate and midwife this process with over a dozen young people, when we have the automated voice of the operator on San Quentin saying, this call is being monitored and recorded by San Quentin Prison, or saying, you have 60 seconds remaining. You have 30 seconds remaining. And, you know, before we have a chance to say, I love you, our line is cut. Although Jarvis does an incredible job of always doing his best to say the I love you thing and get off the phone before the phone gets off of us. And it's always a pool of emotions to catch at the end of those calls, because we recognize as well the limitations, and we try to transcend them, but it's definitely, it can be a lot for all of us. And, you know, as I mentioned, everyone also having loved ones incarcerated, and that bringing back that sense of helplessness that can come. But what we hold tight to is the inspiration of how Jarvis is not helpless.
Right, we're going to take a very short break. We're actually going to play a little bit of climbing poetry for our break from here in D.C., and then you in Brooklyn, and then on out to KPFA, and our teammates also in Los Angeles as well. So it's one of my favorite of their songs. So here's a brief bit of their song as our break music, and then we'll come right back in on that thought that you had, and also Jarvis as mentor, and also the work that you're doing as mentor. And we'll be right back after this.
I wanna believe that love is the color of something here. I wanna believe that words can save the world. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wanna live my life like survival depends on it. Hey, 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 hey. If they only knew. If they only knew why we go. If they only knew.
If they only knew.
Why we do the things we do. Why we go chasing stars. Shifting moons to find more time for truth. When life finds you blindfolded and lonely, running from gray clouds. Go and find your voice. Chasing stars.
This is a song for second chances. Priceless rain dancers chronicling change. We're all trying to redefine normal in 6 different dialects. This is the joy of evolving on the ordinary days. The quiet patience of building thicker skin. The waiting, the loving, the wanting from a distance. The silent chance that
we're... Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our wonderful guest today is Samara. How do I say your last name properly?
Gaev.
Gaev. And that was our teammates, Alixa Garcia and Naima Peniman, Climbing Poetry, climbingpoetry.com. You can hear that song on their website. They will be, we will be cahooting together at Bioneers Climbing Poetry and myself on October 17th at the Bioneers Conference in Marin. And then we are going to do gigs in the following week of that. But, and then I was so, well, Alixa, you know, guided me to you, Samara, and I go, oh, these are such strong, creative, powerful women. What a renaissance cauldron you're stirring. I love it so much. Truly. And then, you know, the old word for truthsayer is soothsayer. So you are, you know, kind of truthsayer, soothsayer theater. It's Truth Worker Theater Company. They are doing a theatrical production of many, many things, but also one, inspired by Jarvis J. Masters, who is our teammate, who is currently residing, on death row in San Quentin. May the doors open. Maybe, who knows? We would love that to be, but he has done so much. Where we were right before break, Samara, is a very crucial, important theme of, you know, freedom under constraint. I mean, Jarvis's first book, Finding Freedom, Writings from Death Row, it was also, you know, when I was in Syria, when it was beautiful, but still under terrible dictatorship, but there was such grace and poetry under this pressure. And we go, and if we turn a little bit now to Jarvis and also your work with Jarvis, that, and the things I remember, from our conversations and whatnot, he, you know, and his work with Pema Chodron, who writes the introduction to his second book, That Bird Has My Wings, that Jarvis also has great humor and irony, as well as compassion, as well as honesty about, you know, how hard things are. But there's a lot of humor in that man's voice, too, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's funny that you talk about that, because, you know, you use the word mentor, and he truly has been a mentor to the young company. You know, just picture a dozen young artists in Brooklyn huddled on the floor, speaking into the phone to an innocent man on death row 3,000 miles away. And just like you said, that laughter, there were tears and there was laughter, storytelling, and self-reflection, poetic exchange. And the most beautiful thing is that everyone was learning from one another, creating theater together, despite those steel bars, because nothing can stop freedom from singing. And one moment that was really powerful was in the midst of some of the heartache that is inevitable when we think about solitary confinement, which is a huge focus of this work focused on Jarvis, that is called In Prism, Boxed In and Blacked Out in America. He has spent over 20 years in solitary confinement. And so one thing that In Prism is interrogating and looking at is the hidden impacts and practices of solitary. And that's something, like you say, you know, astrologically right now, that parting of those black curtains, you know, the impacts and the practices of solitary confinement often go unknown, unarticulated, unexposed. And so in the midst of holding compassionate, tender, vulnerable space for thinking about solitary and capital punishment and Jarvis's circumstances and lived experience, we also found ourselves bursting into laughter as he would tell us stories. And, you know, one of those that we depict in the show is from a chapter from his book called A Reason to Live, where the company felt so compelled to translate this chapter into theater pretty much verbatim and really stage it and bring it to life. And it's a powerful, powerful chapter where he talks about giving another young inmate a reason to live and the way that he goes about connecting out on the yard during yard time with a suicidal inmate. And that's not funny. There's nothing funny about the real mental health impacts of prison and of solitary confinement and the ways that can wear on someone's sense of resilience and connection to their own reason to live. But the way that Jarvis goes about that, and it becomes a motif throughout our work, actually, as well as his stories pulled from his truth, is that he finds these incredible back doors to people's humanity and to connecting with our own humanity and to giving us all a reason to live, whether we are literally suicidal or just having a hard time getting out of bed in the morning or having a hard time, you know, making it through a moment. He's compelled and convicted to give us all a reason to live. And he goes about it in such amazing, poignant, strategic ways that really just grab you at the heart and at the belly and unearth your life force, you know. And that particular story, A Reason to Live, he really kind of goes through this back door of bullying this kid in a it's playful from the outside. I'm sure he didn't feel it in the moment, but in this aggressive way of taunting him, saying, "I want your colored TV. Go through with it. And let me get your shoes, because you're not going to need those things." And this is a young kid who's barely been locked up less than a year, is attributing his depression to issues with his girl. And Jarvis just grabs at his life force, which you don't really realize until you're deeper into the scene. But he's saying, "Hey, you know, I heard you got a colored TV. I heard you have a radio in your cell. You know, I heard, look at those new shoes. Like, let me get those. And he gets more and more aggressive and taunting. And the moral of the story is that the kid gives him, you know, curses him out and, you know, says, you know, forget you. I'm gonna live longer than your ass is ever gonna live. And I'm gonna, you know, I'm going to keep my colored TV and I'm going to keep my sneakers and, you know, you're crazy." And, you know, at the end, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse, Jarvis says.
Well, there's a couple of words you can't say, but, you know, just.
Okay. You know, he said that was the best forget you I've ever heard.
Yes.
At the end.
Yes. I love that.
You know, and the moral of that moment of that where we have the audience hysterical and, you know, Jarvis has his readers, you know, both laughing and crying and just feeling themselves open wide to the expansiveness of our humanity, is that despite the fact that he went in that back door, he found that nugget. He found that place to reconnect a young man who felt hopeless with a sense of agency, a sense of conviction, a sense of resilience and rebellion. And even if it was at his own cost, that was what he was committed to, and that's really the life that Jarvis has been living through his spiritual practice, which is extraordinarily inspiring.
No, that's a brilliant that's a brilliant thing to activate the others. Mars, his will to live, going, no, you can't have my shoes. Brilliant, brilliant. Yes, well, Jarvis is a psychic empath healer, and as well as many things. I mean, we don't, one of the things I also love about, Jarvis and also what you're up to, and, is that, we're also dealing with grit. I remember one time talking, and he elucidates this in his book, that, he is innocent of why he's on death row, but he did, do stuff that got him in prison. And so when we were talking once, because he was saying, I was, so you were a scary guy. And he said, yes, and then with this, arched eyebrow irony, oh, so I would have found you scary. And he goes, oh, no, not you. Just very witty, though, very witty. Yeah. Again, the guys. And then something that I keep with me, there was a guard there, that I saw frequently, who, for whatever weird reason, gave me a teddy bear, going, here. Because we talked about, how profound Jarvis was, and the guard got that. I have that teddy bear on my altar. So we've been in touch, Jarvis, even if I haven't been to visit, but I will. But then Jarvis was also talking about how he would counsel the children of the guards who were violent, and saying, if anybody's in prison, everybody's in prison. Your dad's in prison. That's why, just empathically explaining. And then just one other thing that I keep in my heart always, that maybe it will be, something. Anyway, at one point I said, if you could have anything, just, without even thinking about it, what would you want, Jarvis? And he just said, without a moment's hesitation, he'd go, I want a night of darkness and silence. I'm like, whoa. I mean, that's so poignant. Again, what we take for granted, going, a night of darkness and silence. We would wish that. We would wish that for him and for all beings, a night of darkness and silence. I just find that so profound and poetic. But the mentoring part, so he's had mentors, Pema Chodron, lots of interesting people, and we've done a to and fro thing, and then he's been mentor. I mean, he's got a very busy schedule, right? I mean, he's conducting a global correspondence with people, youth writing to him. He's collaborating with you guys. So again, that idea of under constraint, because part of where Neptune is right now for all of us, and what Jarvis has been carrying since 1962 when he was born, is the image is, learning through, suffering, but redemption through suffering. That is the theme for all of us now.
That's right.
And Jarvis has been, how to be a mentor under this incredible constraint. And that is just, again, with solitary confinement and with noise and with, no darkness, and with all of that provocation, that he's written two books that he carries on this correspondence, that he's working with you guys, to do this production, that he's carrying on this incredible correspondence. What a cultivated, inspirational being, going, we have nothing to complain about, really. And then many, many other fantastic things. But do you want to speak again about, the process of mentoring, and just to toss it to you a little bit? Chiron is a literal little planetoid, but a welcome part of our guiding mythology. And Chiron was the first mentor in Western mythology. And he starts a school for future cultural heroes. And the first thing he does is he teaches them how to take bows and arrows, how to take weapons, and turn them into lutes and string musical instruments. So the first lesson to be a hero from 2,500 years ago that we still want to learn is the transformation of war into art and music through art and music.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
Absolutely. And, that's the process, and it's an incredibly humbling one when you're committed to it the way Jarvis is, the way I strive to be. And, taking that call towards transformation is, it's a tall order. And at the same time, it feels like there's no other way. There's, my own personal experience is one that, I've been doing this work for a very, very long time, over a decade, been working and very drawn to work with young people at this milestone, transformational time in their own lives, and particularly young people who are being pulled into the system and either recently incarcerated or just or on their way to being incarcerated, and finding the incredible vehicle of the arts, of poetry, of storytelling, of movement, of narrative, of theater. On a personal level, that call to transform, you know, when you have faced such suffering or trauma or adversity, then, you know, we have a choice. We have a choice, and it doesn't mean that we need to be all better in order to look at the shadow side of our existence. And that's something that I've really been working with and really been balancing, personally for myself. I did my research around witnessing and trauma in my master's work, and I created a thesis called The Sensate Witness, The Performance of Presence. And through that, I was begging for a reconfiguration of what it means to witness, which etymologically means to see and therefore to know. So it prioritizes the visual and the cognitive. And my question as a doula, as an educator, as someone who works with healing, as a dancer, as an artist, was what happens when we know something that's neither visual nor cognitive? What happens when our knowledge is corporal, when it's embodied? When it's not necessarily conscious, how then do we testify? How then do we tell our stories? And this was something that, you know, you, Caroline, could probably have read to me in my stars, but I didn't see it coming, that shortly thereafter, I lived firsthand exactly that which I had theorized when I was on the other side of the gun and I was pressed up against the suffering of a young man who lived in my own community. He was the same age as my students. And he put a gun to my head and told me over and over and over, if you look at me, I'll kill you. If you look at me, I'll kill you. And he knew what it means to be a witness. Now, he only had an eighth grade education, but he understood, as we all understand, the way the society is structured, and he was committed to protect himself from my capacity to testify. If you look at me, I'll kill you, though my body testified. And, you know, I instantly had to just find a way to survive through that moment that was hugely violating on so many levels of home and body. And after that, because I was brought into the hospital, because I had no agency, despite my fear and despite my politics, I had no agency around whether or not the cops were going to be brought in because there was a weapon involved. And I found myself pulled into a criminal investigation and called into a trial along with his other victims, which at the end of a long, painful summer for all of us, ended up landing this young man in prison serving multiple life sentences. And this didn't give me any relief. You know, people would say to me, oh, wow, you must feel so relieved. You must feel so much better.
No, it doesn't.
And I have to say that the trauma that I have experienced and that I continue, particularly doing this work and being called, feeling like there's no other way than to do this work, and it continues to peel layers of that onion. So you think, you're like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little more whole. I'm starting to recognize myself again when you've survived something like that. And then you find yourself 2 years later, 3 years later, 5 years later, with that same trigger that you suddenly you're in the middle of a flashback. You're having nightmares. You can't sleep. You are riddled with anxiety, and you have to peel away those layers and ask, how do we heal? And what does healing look like? And does it mean pulling those curtains closed, as some may resort to, as some may like to think, let's pull it closed and not look at it, you know? Despite myself sometimes, committed to that healing, not just for myself, but communally, in which we remind ourselves that no, this doesn't make me feel any better, because I know that hurt people hurt people.
Right.
And that's something that I've really been driven by, and why I feel like I've been called to kind of stand in the fire, even though it's been overwhelming at times, and it's made me confront that shadow side. It's made me stand face to face with the exact moment in my life that unraveled me and continues to unravel me, honestly. And remember that I'm committed to creating a community in which we remind ourselves that open people. And if we can commit to being a part of the movement of opening people, then we may actually be able to change things, you know. And when it comes to thinking about this work with Jarvis and thinking about the school to prison pipeline, you know, people look at me and they're like, Samara, you're crazy, you know. And I know that while...
Wait, who says you're crazy?
A lot of people think I'm crazy because I activate a conversation around compassion. And there's a lot of people for whom it's a lot easier to say, if someone can do that, they deserve nothing than to live behind bars. I wish I could kill them. You know, a lot of people have a lot of anger and a lot of fear. And I've been struggling to ask myself, how do I take care of both sides? You know, how do I, take care of one wound on one side of a limb and make sure the infection doesn't spread to the other side. And thinking about having been pulled into a process in which I was very compelled by the safety and survival of other women in my community and wanting to make sure that no one, not even my worst enemy, I would ever wish upon going through what I went through. And all the layers where all the books just fall off the bookshelf of your composition, you know, in being able to stand up again. And at the same time, not being satisfied with the options that are available within the structures of our society of how we resolve that.
Let's put a big vision on our work table too, which is, you know, wise culture. It's like, yes, let's dream big, you know. If we can replace the impulse to punish with the impulse to heal, which is what you're speaking about, you know, and it does take time. People get reactive because we become the thing like, you know, that was done to us. And how do we break this cycle? But it does take theater and time. And sometimes the theater, in a weird way, can be backstage. And I just remember, you know, once, yes, recipient of crime and many other victims, we all gathered, and because we were really also mugged by the criminal system, we had to spend a very long time together. But we were with the detectives on the street, I mean, who were their beat is the street, and we got into astrology and mythology, and they were all, you know, interested. And after several days, I said to the detectives, do you think that there's anyone who cannot be redeemed? And they said, no. We think everyone can be redeemed. Now, it took 3-4 days to get there, but we go, these are the guys on the street, the most kind of reactive cop culture, like, and so that's why respect, look again, you know, whatever we speak to in another is what we're inviting out, going, yeah, there's the reactive, like, punish, you know, and this is what it is to be a guy, you know, but underneath, with story, with theater always happening formally or not, we can draw out surprising parts of people, you know, I think that's part of the irony. Well, let me toss it back to you also. You know, any big story takes us to all stories, you know, and so in the world right now, there's hyper yang Mars death frenzy, like Mars with no Venus, you know, kind of destroying the world. So we might say, you know, human culture, for some, you know, since industrialism in the modern world, we have not initiated Mars. We have not initiated, you know, young teens or veterans returning from home. And the initiation is so simple, which is, we need you. We need your unique genius to help, you know, build Stonehenge or do this theater project or whatever. We need you. And just that idea of the mythological literacy of the exiled, that we really do need what's been exiled. Just working, working with delinquent kids who had contracts on their lives and, you know, some of them had done, you know, bad things or stabbed their principals. But they were so, it took a while, it was a whole two summers, but they were so mythologically brilliant. And just to honor one of these guys and throw it back to you, but the baddest of the bad, you know, these are 12, 13-year-olds, you know, and therefore, in many ways, the most lovable, you know. But he was, like, very wary, and so we were guiding these kids. At first, they were suspicious, and then they were really into it, and then they were really talented to find their power animals. And this one kid who was, he said, okay, all right, I found my power animal, and it's two. It's a snake that lives 100 miles beneath the earth. And it was this kid. He was way, way in there. And the snake sees an eagle flying overhead, and they know they have to get back together for the sake of all creation. And we were like, wow! Oh, my God! A kid had not been reading Carl Jung, you know? So he got so much praise for this. He'd never been praised before. We were like, wow! And then we had them, you know, act it and paint it and dance it and just anyway. So I don't know what happened to him after 3 years, you know, but back to you. May he have found someone like you. You know, again, this idea of, you know, he was such a genius. And so many of the exiled people are mythologically genius. And we do want to invite them exactly in such brave, dedicated projects that you are animating. And do tell people again how they can get in touch with you or support this project, all of your projects, but also the project with Jarvis. Remind people how they can find you.
Absolutely. Well, truthworker.com is the simplest way to find out about Truthworker Theater Company and about myself and my work. And from there, you can find the link, or if you just Google Truthworker Indiegogo. We're doing a fundraiser right now. We have until the 15th of September. We've raised just over 50% of our goal, and I'm really, really hoping that we can meet or far exceed our goal, which is aimed to be able to not even cover one-third of the resources that we need to be able to sustain this work and this program for this year. And it's really centralized around using theater as a mechanism to create accountability within our communities, and in which we're committed to healing within ourselves, healing within our innermost circles, and healing within our outermost circles, and bring the truth to the forefront. So, like you said at the beginning of our conversation, if we can sit with each other and hear one another's stories and understand one another and have compassion for one another, we really would have a world that looked entirely different, where Ferguson and Palestine were not in the media right now, breaking all of our hearts, you know.
Or they'd be in the media as Renaissance and beauty arising from this. Yeah, exactly. And then just one last symbol before, and then I'll hand it to you on our way out because we're almost done. But the image for Jarvis's Neptune when he was born, it's the same as Edward Snowden's moon. Very witty. The image is telephone linemen at work installing links to other realities. And we go, go Jarvis. So that's part of your dedication. Again, we're installing links to other realities. And you're talking to him on the phone. So it's very literal. Absolutely. We love the metaphors being literal. So we've got 20 seconds. Let me hand it to you for a wish, a blessing that you want to spiral out there in any way, whatever you want to say, beautiful Samara.
Just may we all break through the bars of our own incarceration and be committed to liberation within whatever confinement we face, so that we can push from hurt people who hurt people into open people who open people, and send prayers to ourselves and to everyone who may face those bars and be able to break through them, you know, with truth.
That is perfect. You are a genius. Thank you, Samara Gaev. It is a great honor, and let's do more in some cahooting perpetuity. And all good wishes to Jarvis and all who love him and the community out there. CoyoteNetworkNews.com for more information. Thanks always to Timmy Bordop in D.C. and Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Carolyn Casey, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you again so much, Samara.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Know about naturalist Diane Ackerman? You should. Jared Diamond says her vivid writing, inexhaustible stock of insights, and unquenchable optimism have established her as a living treasure. Diane is bringing us surprising new perceptions of nature and scientific developments certain to deepen and brighten your view of the future. Diane will be in Berkeley Thursday evening, September 18th, 7:30, at St. John's Church, 2727 College Avenue. This KPFA benefit, Wheelchair Accessible, will be hosted by Vijaya Nagarajan, delightful professor of religious, spiritual, and environmental studies. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com or supportive bookstores. For September 18, the inspiring Diane Ackerman.
It is now 3:00.